Welcome, everyone, to the ISKCON Silicon Valley Sunday extravaganza. Welcome. Today we'll be having a discussion about Krishna consciousness, which is a process for realizing one's full potential in life. This process is called Bhakti Yoga. Yoga means to link together. And according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the source of my distress and suffering in this world is due to being separated from my original source. So the problem can be solved by rejoining with my source. And the Vedas tell us who that source is. In fact, the definition of the supreme transcendence is that from whom everything else emanates. In the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto mattak smritir jnanam apohanam cha. Vedaischa sarveraham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. He has created the original books of knowledge called the Vedas, and by them, one will come to know who he is. And in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, "Aham sarvasya pravavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam bhutabhava samanvitaha," that I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. And someone who knows this worships me. So, coming back in contact with our original source is a science, and there's a practice involved. It's interesting why it takes so much endeavor to come back to our source, especially since the Vedas say he is everywhere. He's also within our heart. He's right next to us, the closest thing next to us. He's always present in every atom. Ekopyaso racharitum jagadanda koti yachchaktirasti jagadanda chaya yadanta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purushantam aham bhajami. So if he's so close and he's everywhere within every atom, why is it so difficult to see him, do you suppose?
I'll just make an attempt at it, because we have turned our back towards him.
Can you prove that? With Shastra? Well, let's use the shloka book and see if we can find proof. We'll look in the 11th canto. And there is a statement in the 11th canto, which you'll find on page number 265. That says, fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption and the external illusory energy of the Lord. When the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency for illusion called Maya. Therefore, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and his very life and soul. So here's some proof. This verse is spoken by Kavi Yogendra. And Kavi Yogendra says, in this verse, that we're abhinibeshita, we're absorbed in something which is not the Supreme. It seems to be separated from him. Are you looking for this part? Can you please give her a full stand full of books? Is your first time here? Welcome. My name is Vaisheshika Das. Nice to meet you. Where are you from? You live in the area? Los Gatos. Where did you get that beautiful scarf? Which temple in Florida? Have you been there? Oh, when did you go? I see. You live in Gainesville? Fantastic. I was so happy. Well, everyone, you can introduce yourselves. And what is your name? Kathy. Kathy, pleasure to meet you. I'm Vaish. Which part of India? It's the first time you've been here? I think because you have your... I didn't see. Foster City. Oh, okay. Nice to see you. Yes.
My name is Ramananda Sakadas. I am a disciple of His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Kathy, have you been reading the Bhagavad Gita? If you have any questions, then we can also bring those into the class today if you have any particular questions. Because the class here on Sunday is a time to get to know each other, and also to talk about the philosophy in a basic way. So if there's anything that you have on your mind that you want to ask, just let us know. And we'll pass you a microphone too, because these classes are also being broadcast on the internet. A lot of people listen from home and around. Okay? You're welcome. So Shraddha Devi Dasi has said that the one reason that it's hard for us to see our source is because we've turned away. Does that make sense? Do you want to say more about it? What does it mean?
I was thinking along the lines of that Krishna is the source of all light, and when you turn your back towards the light, your own the shadow falls on you, so it's difficult, then it's darkness.
Well, but what about when you want to turn around again? Why does it seem hard? Or is it hard or is it not?
It is hard because we are under the control of Maya. That's one reason. And then also Krishna is covered by the effulgence we are not able to see. And in the Isha Upanishad, there is a verse which says, you remove the dazzling effulgence so that I may see you. And then when we turn our back towards Krishna, actually we fall into ignorance, and the biggest ignorance is not knowing who you are. I think that's a very terrible situation actually to be in, not knowing who you are, mistaking yourself to be somebody else. I mean, for example, in our families, when we see some of the old people, they forget who they are, and we feel so sorry for them, mm-hmm. that, oh, she just doesn't even know, she's suffering from Alzheimer's disease, she cannot recognize this person, that person, but we all are suffering from Alzheimer's disease, you know, in the sense that we do not know. I mean, if you look at it, if you think hard about it, it's a very bad situation, actually.
Yeah, that does sound dire. Yes, Hansapriya.
Actually, my experience from last week I had, I'm suffering because I'm identifying with the situation and not, I'm theoretically aware of it, but I'm not separating when it comes to, you know, facing the situation. So I identify with the situation that I am the one who is suffering.
I see. So we're talking about now the process for coming back to our original source. So the basis of Krishna consciousness is that actually originally we're full of bliss and knowledge, and our source is fully blissful, fully knowledgeable, and also eternally existent. Okay. And so now, somehow or other, our blissfulness is blocked. Our sense of being eternal is blocked. And the sense of our existence is being blocked. I think that I'm going to die as I identify with the body, which is just temporary. I'm eternal. I exist forever. Yet I think there's a point at which I'm going to die. And also, I don't experience complete happiness. As we read earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada said one can never be fully happy or fully miserable in the material world. It's at best mixed happiness here, so I can't get that complete blissfulness. And my knowledge also becomes obstructed. So the process for coming back to my to the situation of full bliss, knowledge, and existence is the process of Krishna consciousness. And so I was asking, what are the obstacles to that? And you said that you tend to identify with the body. Shraddha Devi, you said that it's because we're turned in the wrong direction. And so what is the actual obstacle, though? That's the condition that I'm in right now, but what's keeping me actually from engaging fully in the process?
Our attachments also keep us from, you know, turning to God, like our immediate family or our job or attachment and desires.
Okay. So we're in a particular situation now that we're attached to, and there's a process of gradually getting out of that attachment, right? So these attachments are described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Let's read this last purport in the 15th chapter, because it describes one of the major obstacles that someone has from moving forward in Krishna consciousness. This is on page 652 in the Bhagavad Gita. You'll see what, when you get there, Kathy, it says text number 20 on page 652. So in this verse, Krishna says, "This is the most confidential part of the Vedic scriptures, O sinless one, and it is disclosed now by me. Whoever understands this will become wise, and his endeavors will know perfection." Here's the purport. The Lord clearly explains here that this is the substance of all revealed scriptures, and one should understand this as it is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus one will become intelligent and perfect in transcendental knowledge. In other words, by understanding this philosophy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engaging in his transcendental service, everyone can become freed from all contaminations of the modes of material nature. Devotional service is a process of spiritual understanding. Wherever devotional service exists, the material contamination cannot coexist. Devotional service to the Lord and the Lord Himself are one and the same because they are spiritual. Devotional service takes place within the internal energy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is said to be the sun, and ignorance is called darkness. Where the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. Therefore, whenever devotional service is present, under the proper guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, there is no question of ignorance. Everyone must take to this consciousness of Krishna and engage in devotional service to become intelligent and purified. Unless one comes to this position of understanding Krishna and engages in devotional service, however intelligent he may be in the estimation of some common man, he is not perfectly intelligent. The word anaga, by which Arjuna is addressed, is significant. Anaga, O sinless one, means that unless one is free from all sinful reactions, it is very difficult to understand Krishna. One has to become free from all contamination, all sinful activities, then he can understand. But devotional service is so pure and potent that once one is engaged in devotional service, he automatically comes to the stage of sinlessness. While one is performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees in full Krishna consciousness, there are certain things which require to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of heart. The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. Thus one gives up the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The second weakness of heart is that as one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature, he becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. The problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of heart. In this chapter, the first five verses describe the process of freeing oneself from these weaknesses of heart, and the rest of the chapter, from the sixth verse to the end, discusses Purushottam Yoga. So, if we're engaged in devotional service, then we're in contact with the internal energy. That means, just like Shraddha Devi was saying, that when we're facing the sun, there's no question of being in darkness. So when we're engaged in devotional service, then we're in a liberated state. And as soon as we turn away, then we'll see the darkness and the shadow. However, in the last paragraph, we hear that there may be a situation in which I don't want to turn towards the light. What it's causing me, even though it's not in my interest, to stay in the darkness. And that's described here as weakness of heart. And so Srila Prabhupada is saying that we have to overcome these two kinds of weakness of heart in order to fully come to Krishna consciousness. So then he says the means to do that is described in the first six verses of the 15th chapter. So first of all, do you have any comments about what we read or what I'm just mentioning so far before I talk about the first six verses of the 15th chapter? Okay. So weakness of heart, any comment about that? What is weakness of heart?
Prabhupada mentioned two weaknesses. One is a desire to lord it over the material nature. The second one is because of that desire to lord it over the material nature, he gets attached to the matter. So that's a second weakness. His propensity for attachment that increases. But I feel that desire to lord it over the material nature can be so strong or so subtle that even devotional services also, it's very hard to know what is actually pushing behind that person, whether the desire to lord it over the material nature or the devotional service to the Lord.
Is that a question?
That's not really a question. That is sometimes I feel for myself that okay. What is actually motivating me here.
I see. Okay. And the topic is still how to overcome weakness of heart. So you gave a definition of what it is, and you also expressed how sometimes weakness of heart feels so weak that it feels like, you know, will I ever be able to fully take Krishna consciousness? Something like that, right? Which is stronger, the darkness or Krishna consciousness? Any other comment about weakness of heart?
There's this email I constantly get from a person I don't know at work, and which is about, she's trying to sell medicines to me. And one of the things that she mentioned was that animals have a survival instinct. And, you know, like they could be at the edge of a ledge, but they won't take the next step, or a horse will not, even in darkness, he knows where the water is. But then she had commented that it appears that human beings do not want to and do not have the survival instinct, in the sense that the doctor will tell you that, you know, do not eat this. You have high cholesterol, but we still want to do that. So, and that, I'm just tying it to, it is the weakness of the heart.
It's kind of a weakness of heart. That's a good example, that somebody knows that smoking will kill them, but then they continue to do it. Of course, there's an addiction involved, and that's another aspect of why it's... Hare Krishna. Welcome back. That's another... aspect of material nature. It's very tricky. Why it's tricky to get out of the clutches of the material nature, out of the cycle of addiction, let's say. There's a process, and it for instance, in smoking, people find it very difficult to give that up because physically there's a response where the body needs it again and again and again. And it requires regulation. It requires developing inner strength and developing new habits in order to overcome that, right? And there is a kind of ignorance also involved when you talk about how something may be bad for me, but I continue to do it anyway. Even though I hear about it, I don't accept it. It's a kind of a denial that I don't take the thing that's good for me. I take the thing that's bad for me. All these are weaknesses of heart. Kathy, please pass her the microphone.
Do you think that there's some kind of process involved in ignoring? Because ignoring is the kind of thing that, you know, like you were describing it, the process of addiction or other things that are ignored, you know. So I think there's some sort of process involved in ignoring that enables us to not see, to not notice, to not pay attention, to ignore, right?
Yes, that's an astute observation. Thank you. It actually brings up a point. What is ignorance? You can also say it's ignorance. Ignorance is ignorance. And there is a way in which, for instance, there's a process to keep myself in ignorance so that I can go on. This is sort of the definition of ignorance, tamogun, or darkness, is that because of the ignorance, I'm able to do things over and over again that are not good for me. They're harmful from beginning to end, but I still do them. It's a kind of, I'm bound to do that over and over again. And there is a psychological process, obviously, in which people justify why they're doing something. I think that it's generally the case that people don't, or they're able to justify and therefore keep doing things that may be harmful. So that's important to know also, that there's a process. And so we come to what's the cure, how to get out of weakness of heart, because as Prabhupada says at the end of the chapter, these things are detrimental to our happiness. So how to overcome those? So what are the first verses in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and what are they talking about? These are the verses that he says help us to overcome weakness of heart. So just in a summary, before we look at them, the first six verses in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita are talking about what the material world is and what's our part in it. It's described as a banyan tree. The entire world that we're sitting in right now is a gigantic tree. And it has branches and roots and leaves. All these features are described in these first few verses in the 15th chapter. And Krishna says then that it's we can't see its form. Although he's describing it for us, that it looks like a banyan tree with its roots upward and its branches down. We can't see it because it's so big. Na rupama sieha tato palabhyate nanto na chadya na cha sampratishta. Na rupam, you can't see the form, na cheha, and you can't see where it's situated, and you don't know where the end of it is. So this is important information to start with, to know where I am. Often people don't question where they are and just go on assuming that they're in a certain place, so they can't find their way out. So Krishna's giving us some orientation about where we are. We're lost in a gigantic tree. And he advises us then that the way to get out of that situation is that we have to cut down the tree. Just cut it down. And then he tells us how to cut down the tree. And then he says what to do after we cut down the tree. So these are several things. One is that we're lost in a huge tree. We can't see the beginning or the end. And that to get out, we have to cut it down. And afterwards, we have to go on a journey. And he says that journey is to find the original person who created the tree. And then he describes some qualities that we should develop in our life and in our heart, in ourselves, so that we can stay on the process, stay in the process of devotional service. So let's look at the first six verses, because these are the ones that tell us how to get free from weakness of heart. And welcome to ISKCON Silicon Valley. Thank you for coming. Are you just passing through? How nice. Nice. Great to see you all. Hare Krishna. So starting on page 629, this is called the Yoga of the Supreme Person. And the translation of text number one is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. Text number two. The branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to the fruit of actions of human society. Three and four. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns, and there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything is extended since time immemorial. Text number 5. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto that Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Number 6. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. Okay, now some, before we go more into the verses, some reflections. Anything that you heard that stuck in your mind or that you have a question about? Yes, Bir Krishan Prabhu, please use the microphone.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, here in the first verse, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is said, you know, it's Krishna who says, and he says that it is said. So who said that?
Well, you'll notice in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna quotes from authorities. And sometimes, as in one chapter, he refers to the Brahma Sutra. And he'll say, according to the Brahma Sutra, it says this. And when he says, it is said, then he's talking about the authorities say that these things are said. There are different kinds of knowledge and wisdom and how they're passed down. Shruti pratyaksham aityam anamanam chatushpadam pramanishmanamastanad vikalpatsa virajite. Krishna says this himself in the Bhagavatam, that there's different kinds of praman, or evidence that we can take from. And one is shruti, which means from the Vedas. Pratyaksha means direct experience. Anuman means by logical deduction. And aityam means wisdom that's passed down. So there's a certain amount of aityam, or wisdom that's spoken, passed down through oral tradition. Yes.
He said, so what he means is what the great sages or saintly person or the Shastra says.
Yeah, like that.
But then he is the original of the Shastras. When so it says, even Shastra quote him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah, so in this sense, what you're saying, he is showing by example how one moves in spiritual life. As Krishna says, for instance, at the end of the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that one must take Shastra. In other words, to know how to move, one should take evidence from the Shastra. So even Krishna shows by example how to do that. Okay? Nice observation. What other thing stuck in your mind, or would you like to comment? Pass the microphone to Kathy, please.
Hi. What is the difference between detachment and ignoring?
What is the difference between detachment and ignoring? You mean in the sense that, like, give me a practical example of what you mean, you're thinking of.
Well, we were just talking about ignoring how, you know, and this is a process of ignoring, and we can become then tangled up in addictions or attachment to material plane. And, you know, but I was thinking that the part of ignoring is a kind of detachment. And here it talks about detachment from the tree, you know, detachment from And I didn't understand what that meant.
Okay. Well, let's look at the root of the word ignoring, and again, it has something to do with ignorance. So in actual detachment, the kind of detachment we're interested in and that Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita, there's an illumination, there's knowledge. And therefore, once we have knowledge, we make a proper choice, independent choice. In ignorance, we may still, we may not attending to something because we're not able to, or because we don't want to, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we're making the right choice. So just in the context you're talking about, detachment, real detachment is based on clear knowledge. And as an example, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nasato vidite bhavo napavo vidite sita ubayorapi drishtontas tvanayos tatvadarshibi. He says that there are things that exist, and there are things that permanently. And he says those things that exist always exist. And those things that don't really exist, they're temporary, they're fleeting. They'll move on and they'll pass. Nasato vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sita, ubayora bidushtontas. So therefore he says, those who have clear knowledge, clear vision, have observed and seen the difference between the two. Tvanios tatvadarshibi. They see the truth. They see the difference between, for instance, in this world, that which is important and that which isn't. They see the difference between the soul, which is permanent and has a connection to the spiritual world and to Krishna, and the things in this world which are ephemeral, which are cloud-like, which are passing through. And when one comes to knowledge and is able to distinguish between those two things clearly, then one attains real detachment from knowledge out of a sense of ignorance. One may neglect something temporarily, but might not be in knowledge. But someone who comes to full knowledge can see the difference between both and therefore choose the thing which is actually valuable. So we've been advised now to use a weapon of detachment to cut down the tree, the illusory tree that we're living in, which is the cause of our suffering. And so how to come to real detachment, that's also the topic of these first few verses in this chapter. And there's a secret in this, and that is the secret of what is the material world. And that secret is that the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. That's the great secret. Some people think, I'll just cut down the tree and then there'll be nothing. But beyond that, there's something. So if there is if you see a reflection of a tree, what does that mean? It means there's a real tree somewhere. If you get counterfeit money, what does it mean? There's real money somewhere else. So it means that real detachment, actually, according to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, is based on real attachment. Real detachment is based on real attachment. That means that I'm always attached. There is no situation in which I'm actually detached. Even in circumstances where I may be detached temporarily, I may be ignoring something or putting it off. If I'm not in complete knowledge, then eventually I'll come back to it. Like sometimes, for instance, we were using the example of smoking or some other addiction. Someone might ignore it for a while. But then when the cycle comes back around again, they start it again. They haven't broken the cycle completely. what this means. Krishna says also in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasa dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishva nivartate. This is a very important verse for those who are using the weapon of detachment to cut down the tree. As when will I come to that point where I'm actually detached? When you're actually attached to something else, that's when. And the verse says that while I'm in the process of cultivating detachment, I may still have a taste for the thing I'm trying to detach from. I'm still thinking about it. Even though I'm ignoring it and I'm keeping it far away, I may still be considering in one part of my heart or mind that, well, if this doesn't work out, maybe I'll go back to it. Or I may, the justification process might come in. It's not so bad being overweight after all. Like, you know, I can eat a half a gallon of ice cream. The good of doing that actually outweighs the, you know, it's better for my psyche, and I'll be a better, even so what, I'm fat, you know, it's okay. So, however, once I experience a higher taste, that, even the proclivity, even the intention or the thought to go back to that lower thing vanishes. It's a natural phenomenon. When I get something better, I abandon the other thing. It's just plain old abandonment. People do it all the time in the illusory world. You know, someone gets a better job. What do you do? The guy offered me twice the money and, you know, half the hours. And, you know, the other, your original boss says, but don't you love me? And it's like, yeah, sure, but see you later. Yeah, I love you and everything, but, you know, I got to go. You just leave. You go. You got twice the money and half the work. And it's, I'm sorry. You know, I can't do this anymore. Eventually, you know, over time. So in the Bhagavatam, the demigods were praying to Krishna within the womb. And they said this very thing, that any situation in the material world where you don't have the highest possible taste. I mean, there are a lot of tastes to be had in this world. There's description how this world is in some of the original Vedic mantras, Om Bhur Bhuva Swa Tat Savitu Varenyam Bhargo Devasya. There are regions of consciousness and happiness. In the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the various regions of the universe are described in meticulous detail as the hero of that book goes through all those different regions. Even the coverings of the universe, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, have a certain deity characteristic and flavor that you can become attached to and live there. Play, you know, within the realm of our Silicon Valley, there's various positions you can take and aspire to. And everyone's doing that. Everyone's on some path to try to find a situation of perfection, I would argue. Otherwise, why are they doing it? They're not doing it to become imperfect or to become unhappy. They want to come to perfect knowledge so they can have perfect happiness. You want to come to perfect knowledge so that you can have freedom. That's what it means. The more knowledge you have, just in a basic sense in this world, the better job you'll have and the more freedom you'll have. Johnny, do you want to work in a car wash the rest of your life? You better go to school. If you don't go to school, you're going to work in a car wash the rest of your life. Okay, here comes an invasion. Can someone monitor the invasion? Or so, therefore, the demigods said, as they were praying to Krishna in the womb, Yene ravindaksha vimuktamaninas. Very important verse. Yene ravindaksha vimuktamaninas toyasta bhavad avashuddha buddhaya. Aruya krichchena paramparam tata patantyato nadrita yushmadangrayaha. They said that, the demigods did, they said that Krishna is a person. He has lotus eyes. He's very beautiful. Yini Arivandaksha means he has lotus-like eyes. So the first indication is that there's a personal relationship that we're missing. And then they said that Vimuktamaninas, many people think that they've attained a certain kind of perfection in this life or a kind of liberation. Like the guy, you know, who's driving a better car on the road, you know, he's got a Jaguar and he's got a lot of money. And he thinks temporarily, he may think, you know, I got a full tank of gas. I got $20 million in the bank. I got enough interest, you know, so I don't have to work. And I'm okay. I'm liberated. How long is he liberated for, really? That's going to end, right? That's a temporary kind of liberation. So what the Bhagavatam says, Aruya Krishchena, he worked hard to get there, first of all. Maybe not in this life, but, you know, in the last life. You have to work hard to get any kind of perfection in this world. So then, Aruya Krishchena means you got to work hard if you're going to get that perfection. But then what's the result? Aruya Krishchena Parampadam Tata. Again, you'll fall down again from it. The invasion is still on. Therefore, he said, it's an imaginary kind of liberation. It's an imaginary situation. You didn't actually get real detachment. You didn't get real liberation. You thought you did, but you didn't make it. Yene Ravindaksha, and the key is in the first line. Ravindaksha means you didn't get the lotus-eyed. There's a relationship, a personal relationship. Everyone wants the relationship. That's why we work hard. We want that rasa or that exchange, and it's got to be love. And that's what every living entity is looking for, is love. Love completes us. If you have love, you can live in a tent on the beach with somebody else, and you'll be okay. You know, and if you live in a big palatial building and you hate the person you're living with, who cares? You know, it feels like a small space. You're stuck there with that person. But when you have love, you get knowledge, a kind of knowing, and a kind of detachment from other things. You're full. You feel happy. So the kind of real detachment is the most intense attachment. It requires the most intense attachment. Is that what the soul is? The soul is an appreciator, a servant, a lover of the Supreme. And when we forget that unique and completely fulfilling relationship, then we seek it elsewhere. That old song from my childhood, looking for love in all the wrong places. You remember that? Yeah, looking for love in all the wrong places. And if you go through all the lyrics of songs, you'll find people actually lamenting for the loss of love over and over again. I had it, I lost it. So, the key in this chapter is that the world is a reflected place of our actual home. And the place we're actually looking for exists. We just have to transfer whatever attachments we have now to that original place. And when we do, we'll become so attached that everything else will become insignificant. That's real detachment. It's so good, you don't care what's going on elsewhere, right? That's what's required. Otherwise, there's always a sense that, you know, well, maybe I'll give this up. If it doesn't work out, I'll give it up. But what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter? When someone's even approaching that supreme, that lotus-eyed Lord, that relationship, yam labham chaparam labham. It says there's a sense, there's a feeling that this is a gain that I'm getting now, of which there is no greater gain. There's not that same experience in this world. I may get something, but there's a nagging feeling always that maybe it wasn't good enough. And sometimes people become enamored temporarily. Like anyone who's a counselor of any kind or a parent or has been around for a while, you see young people come together who fall in love. If you've seen enough relationships of people, young people falling in love, they just think the world's beautiful now. I have my, you know, he's the most, she's the most. There's never been one more, right? And what happens a year later? Okay, 2 years later, all right, 7 years later. Give it some time. It changes, doesn't it? And do they feel exactly the same way? Are they able to sustain that feeling? It evaporates. It's moving. That's the material world. That's what's being described in this 15th chapter. It's a dreamlike place. It's a reflected place. It's not the real place. It looks the same. The variety is there. There's an attraction in the variety. If you take long flights, I take a lot of long flights. At least I have been recently, over the last 40 years. And when I get in the fuselage and I'm flying for a long period of time, when I get out after 10 hours, there's a way in which I just want to see some variety. I want to touch the ground. I want to see the air. It all seems so nice. I don't care what it is, as long as it's variety outside that fuselage. And the soul needs that variety. And therefore, it's understandable that I get attracted to this material world because the variety is there. There's only one problem with it, the main problem is that it's not permanent. It won't really satisfy me. The reflected fruit in the water won't really be juicy. There's an idea that it is, but it doesn't satisfy. So we have to get the real thing. That's the only real solution. We have to get the real thing. And, you know, there's a lot of wrangling around the world. Everyone wants to corner the market on religion. You know, everyone has the last prophet and the only way. And, you know, such and such was the last prophet. Such and such is the only way. This is the, that go around the world, look at any process and people say, yeah, well, you know, if you want your way out, this is the only way to do it. The real thing means that you actually have to come back to your source. And the Bhagavatam gives the gold standard and the definition of how one becomes happy and is connected with the source by saying that the experience and the engagement must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. You must find a process through which you can have unmotivated and uninterrupted love for God, for our source. And in Krishna consciousness, you know, we'd say it's a non-sectarian process. Anyone can do it. And it's not limited to, you know, we say, if you have a process that is effective, fine, let's do it. Make it effective. This just happens to be a very refined process with a lot of knowledge and information to guide us along, and a long line of teachers who are even present today who have taken the knowledge and can demonstrate it so that, you know, we have the maximum amount of help in the process of gaining that vision of the spiritual world for ourselves. So the weakness of heart is there. It's a concomitant part of living in the material world. Otherwise, I wouldn't succumb to things that are bad for me. I wouldn't do them over and over again. So we must become strong. And there's a process for that. There's a regulated process of freedom. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, that one who is able to take this process gradually. What does gradually mean? It's a very interesting word, isn't it? It means that you graduate at intervals, gradually. It has the word gradual means that you graduate. You have to move ahead. But you can do that in small steps, one step at a time, graduate to the next level of discipline. And those disciplines in Krishna consciousness are particularly potent because along with them come revelation. This is said also in the Bhagavatam, and this is important to our discussion. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. If you engage in direct service to the Supreme, to the Supreme Source, who's there within your heart. He's there within the atom. And we say, most particularly, he's there in his name. This is our philosophy. This is the Church of the Holy Names. That we're saying that if you want this kind of communion with the Source, with your Source, with the Source of all happiness, with all the Source of all pleasure, knowledge, existence, you can have it. Because the Supreme is there in his name. This is our philosophy in a nutshell. This is what Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught everywhere he went. He said, you can have it, take the name. Say the name and repeat it. And when you do that, you'll have the experience for yourself. There's the transcendent reality is there, present within the name. Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. He says, by performing this Bhakti Yoga, which primarily we're doing through the repeating the name of God, Janayat Yeshu Vairagyam, very quickly you'll get this detachment that we're talking about. Gyanam Cha Yadahaitum, you also get knowledge. Difference between just ignorance and real detachment. It comes along with knowledge. Tachchadadhana munayo gyana vairagya yuktaya pashyantyatmani chatmanam bhaktya shuta grihitaya. Bhagavatam also says that we become fortified by that. When you're actually solidly situated on the path going back to the Supreme, you know it. Because you're really getting knowledge and you're really getting detachment. And it's compared in the Bhagavatam to eating, something that we experience all the time. It's such a nice example. When you're hungry and you eat something that's nourishing, you know for yourself that you're feeling satisfied, that your hunger is going away, and that you're getting nourished. So in the same way, when you're on the actual process, in the actual process, you'll feel this nourishment. And you'll feel detachment, naturally. After you've had a good meal and you're full and someone says, you want some more? No, thanks. No, take some more. No, I don't want any. Yeah. Kathy.
The way you describe it, it sounds like more like attachment. You know, like I get attached, I have a realization that, oh wow, this is real love. This feels like I feel grounded in it. I can experience it as real and authentic, and I want to attach to that. And that somehow, every time I find a way to be attached to the real thing, then I can let go of other false attachments. Is that what you're saying? I mean,
that is exactly what I'm saying.
So that it's like you're, in a way, you are fed, you're fulfilled, you feel enough, and then you are able to just, other things just fall away.
Exactly.
Like that.
Exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that real detachment comes when you become really attached to the higher thing. And therefore, it's a positive process. We're not interested in the negative process. Yena tena prakarena mana krishna niveshayet. The effect in our sampradaya, Rupa Goswami is considered the chief of our sampradayas. Therefore, we're called Rupanugas. We're followers of Rupa Goswami. He has told us that the most important thing is not following all the rules and regulations. Because he says, our main purpose is to remember our source, Krishna, and to not forget him. And whatever way you can do that, the best. All the other rules are servants of that, of those two principles. Because if you remember Krishna and you don't forget him, then you're always in the light. And you'll experience a superior taste. And all other things will seem unimportant to you. You're just not interested. That's the only real protection. The best defense is a good offense. And on a number line, if you look at the negative numbers, this is the material life. I'm working hard and it looks like I'm racking up a higher number, but the higher number is actually negative. I'm going more into debt. In fact, people buy things that they want and then they lose interest in them or they break, but they still have to pay for them. The payment process goes on with interest and that piles up. That's material life. And the more I try to remedy the situation in a material way, the more I get the more debt I get. Now, some philosophies bring us all the way up to zero, meaning that I feel that I've been cheated. The material world is really a cheating process, and everyone should know that. It's just in ignorance that I let it go on because I don't have an alternative. Or I have some kind of weakness of heart. I just participate in it. Again, let's revisit the you know, any modern song or play or movie. And generally, you know, if you look, you'll see that people are playwrights and movie producers are talking about, you know, real life situations where people become frustrated and they lose something. Or, you know, there's a ongoing drama here in this material world, which is never quite solved. So some people then conclude that the way to do that is to extinguish this variety and this working and this debt. Just cut it all out by taking the self out of the equation. I become nothing. This is voidism. Or a kind of impersonal liberation where I give up variety because variety is the source of my trouble right now. Like a person who becomes ill and is in the hospital and is suffering so much. You know, if you've ever been in a situation where you're so sick that you don't care for food anymore, have you ever been in that situation? And when you get a fever, you lose your appetite, right? And someone says, here, I made you a cherry pie, assuming you like cherry pie. All right, banana cream pie. That work better for you? And someone says, have a banana cream pie. And you just say, sorry, I'm not interested because, you know, you're sick. And when you're sick like that, you might conclude that I'll never like banana cream pie again. I'll never eat it again. Better to commit suicide. Someone might be in such a condition physically that they think, you know, better I die because I'm suffering so much. I'll never eat again. I can't walk properly and so on. They'll think, just let me give up my existence. So in a parallel way, the idea is that material existence is so troublesome and it's so disappointing that philosophically I may then conclude that the best idea is to give up the self and just merge into nothing. And therefore there are philosophies which direct us in this way. Just give up all desire, become nothing, and then you'll become happy. Bhagavatam says not possible, because eternally we desire. It's the source of our happiness, actually, but we're just desiring the wrong thing. So you can't extinguish it. Eventually it'll come back. Even if you burn down a field full of grass and plants, and it looks like it's gone. After the next rain, lo and behold, that little green hue comes back and then plants sprout up everywhere. The roots and seeds are still there. It comes back. But Krishna consciousness means to pass that point of zero and come all the way to the positive numbers. That's our real life. You were going to make a point?
I have a question.
Yes, please.
So we do so many activities
in this
we do so many activities in this material world.
which was cause of suffering, and we do have a lot of fall downs. Is that the activity of the soul or of the mind or any other subtle thing? Because we put the soul at a high pedestal, saying it's pure, pristine, and all that. So is the soul the cause of all these activities, which are the fall down activities and all that, or the mind or something like that?
Well, here's what we say. We say that the soul is qualitatively the same as this, our supreme source. Just like there's the sun and the sun rays. Now, this is a subtle point, because this goes to the keystone of our philosophy, which is called Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. It means that we're simultaneously one and at the same time different from the Lord. And there's a key word in front of that, which is achintya. Achintya means inconceivably. We're same as and different from the Supreme at the same time. An example can be given in the material world, and that is the sun. There's the sun, and then there's the molecules of the sun ray coming out. There's pencil rays of sunlight coming out. We're tiny like that. Although we are part of the Supreme, our nature is tiny. We're called chitkana. We're a little particle of pure consciousness. Therefore, because of our minute size, there's the possibility for us to fall into illusion. The entire sun never is out of light, because it's the source of all light. But the little rays, actually, can become obscured because of a fog. So in the same way, the soul, because of its tiny nature, is called tatasta, which means it's marginal in its nature. Tatasta means that we're subject to our environment because we're so small. That's why people advertise, because they know if you just show people something, expose them to something long enough, they'll become influenced by it. We're easily influenceable in that way. So the soul can become influenced. Also, another important point is the soul has the same quality as the Supreme. And what is the Supreme's quality? Abhijna and Swarat means that the Supreme, our Supreme Source, is fully independent and fully knowledgeable. Now, we have the same nature, but we're tiny. Therefore, we have minute independence. There's a possibility that we, and this is Krishna's gift to us, that we have this independence. We can misuse the independence in the wrong way. Once we give up our independence and we're in Maya, then we actually lose our freedom. When we're deeply under the influence of the modes of material nature, we're really not free. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami that we require an outside influence to rescue us from that freedom, from that situation. Maya mugda jivernahi swata Krishna gyan. Jivari kripaya hoila Krishna Veda Puran. He said that because we're influenced by the illusory energy, we can't automatically come out by ourselves. We're helpless to do that. Therefore, we require an outside influence. And therefore, he said, Krishna has sent Vyasadeva to give the Vedas, to give us knowledge, so that we can extricate ourselves. And then, through the process of knowledge, taking help from the Vedas, from spiritual master, from the Lord within the heart, then gradually we can rise above that ignorance. We have the power to do that. We should take it. In fact, the idea is that we should understand that whatever situation we're in now, that we caused it. Once we come to knowledge that we're in a situation, I mean, ignorance means to think, I'm okay. I don't need any help. I'm fine the way I am. There's nothing wrong with birth, death, old age, and disease, and I don't care if I become a dog in my next life. Prabhupada used to mention that when he'd go to universities and he'd talk about falling back down again into dog life. A lot of times students would say, I don't mind being a dog. What's wrong with being a dog? Prabhupada said, this is ignorance. Of course, if we said, I'll make you a dog right now, no one would want to do it. I remember Steve Jobs said it at the commencement speech he gave at Stanford a few years ago. When he was faced with death, of course, everyone's faced with, but he was right in front of it because he had pancreatic cancer, and they told him that he had 3 months or a month or something like that. And then they reversed it about 12 hours later when they found it was a different kind of pancreatic cancer. But he commented, he said, even those who know they're going to heaven don't want to die to get there. Difficult situation. So it's our existential condition that we are a tiny soul. We have minute independence. Somehow or other, we've fallen under illusion. Somehow or other. Now we're in that situation. We've come to knowledge. Our recourse is to cut down the tree and develop attachment for the real world, for the spiritual world, for our home. It's not hard either. The thing is, it's not hard because actually our home, our source, is all attractive. It's like, you know, if you have the choice, you've been out on the road suffering, you're lost, you're beat up, you're dirty, you lost your wallet, and you're living out of the garbage can, and someone says, hey, you know what? I know you. Your dad's rich, and I know where he lives, and you know, here's a plane ticket. You want to go home? How long does it take you to decide? You want some, you know, want some nice new clothes and a warm bath and go home and see all your friends? So when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we're hearing about our original home. And when we come out of ignorance, we actually awaken that attraction. It's naturally there. It's not something artificial. It's not something outside what's already in us. The musk deer has within its navel the fragrance of musk. And all his life, he's prancing around the forest looking for the source of that musk, not knowing that it actually comes from his own navel. So similarly, I'm bouncing around the universe looking, where's that actual happiness? I remember when I was a kid, before I joined the movement, there were so many things we were doing for so-called fun, and I kept thinking, like, this isn't fun. These things aren't fun. They're just troublesome. And, you know, where's the real fun? And so we should process, and we can come out of that situation and come to the real knowledge. That's the point. Once we realize that we're in the situation, you know, how we got here is not so important, but the fact that we can make the right kind of discipline and culture and take the right kind of association and use our independence properly will bring us step by step in a very positive, optimistic, encouraging way towards the Supreme, so much so that even when we're in the beginning stages, because the signs are so promising, even if I'm still influenced to one degree or another and by the modes of material nature and by darkness, I'll feel so encouraged because I see the early signs are so good. If the early signs are this good, what must be that, you know, the more advanced stage? This is another kind of encouragement we get from within the heart. Did that help? Okay. Yes. A follow-up.
Because we were talking about the banyan tree, Ashwatthama tree, the reflection.
Yes.
And my daughter was going to the Sanskrit class today, or actually Saturday, and she did that shloka in front of the whole class. And the teacher and the kids, the teacher appreciated it. And right down I go, there's a book actually which had that banyan tree and the reflection. So there was a chance to really explain my daughter that this is the banyan tree and that's a reflection.
Nice. Very nice. So they're learning shlokas. Sweet. Chat. Any other things? Did we wrap it all up in a neat little package? Yes. Uh-oh, we're going to have a microphone. Hi, welcome. Please come in. Nice to see you. Hare Krishna.
Also in translation, we read somewhere that determination.
So, determination.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about this morning over breakfast, weren't we? What did we say? You wrote it all down, didn't you? You want to say, do you remember our conversation about determination?
Nothing.
Well, determination. Okay. There's a famous quote by a saying by Goethe, the philosopher Goethe. And he said that until one is committed, then all the forces of the universe are not available to us. But as soon as we actually commit, then all the forces of the universe come to our avail. And I heard a while back, somewhere in history, I don't remember the exact details, but there was a great conqueror. And when he'd land on a new continent, he would make his warriors burn the ship. Yeah. They get into shore and they had to face an army on land, and he'd say, burn the ship, then we'll go fight. Because then they knew there's no way back. We're not going back to the ship, guys. It's either you win or you know, you're out of the game. And also, when Narada Muni met the hunter, Magrari, in the forest, he met the hunter in the forest, and he was advising him about giving up his livelihood of killing animals for a living. And he told him about a higher way of living. And when the hunter was curious about it, he said, Narda, his teacher, said, I'll tell you everything about it, but first you break your bow. He said, break my bow? That's how I make my living. He said, exactly. Break your bow and I'll tell you. And so this determination, if we make a move first, and this comes to the very essence of who we are. We are actually, we have independence. It's a voluntary process, spiritual life. And, you know, basically we can go kicking and screaming, or we can delay the process by millennia or more, or we can actually do it. There's the story Giriraj Maharaj tells about how there was a young man who was helping Prabhupada to translate some of his books into Hindi. And the young man had a father who had a habit, bad habit of smoking, and he was trying to give it up. So when they'd come visit Prabhupada together, sometimes the man would ask Prabhupada for his blessings to help give up the smoking habit. And finally, Prabhupada said to him, you can get the blessings and special mercy, but what it means is that Krishna will make you so miserable that you'll be forced to give it up. Or he said, you could just do it voluntarily. So our determination is a very, you know, determination is a very powerful element in the world. If someone's determined, for instance, I read a book that someone recommended to me recently, it was written by a general, and it's called War Fighting. I thought it was funny. I was reading on the plane once, and I'm dressed as a monk, and someone was sitting next to me and said, what are you reading? It's like, it's by the U.S. Marine Corps, War Fighting. I said, no, but it really has some important ideas in it. It's a very esoteric book, actually. And one of the ideas is that he points out is that bigger armies don't always win. If you look through history, you'll find over and over and over again that the small guy won the war. The guy with fewer munitions, with even not as good as a strategic fighting point. But he won. Why? Because he had more determination. He had more reasons to win. America far out had more firepower than the Viet Cong, the Vietnam War, if anybody goes back that far. But they won. Why? It was their homeland. They live there. We're flying all the, we are flying boys who are out of, say, you know, stop taking LSD for a few minutes. Let's go fight these people over overseas, you know, and then you can come back. And they were like, oh, all right, you know. And they get over there, and there's these guys, at the, you know, living in their hometown. And, you know, who's going to win? The guy with more bombs? No. The guy with more determination. That was the Viet Cong. They had to win. That was their home. They're not letting somebody take their home away. So our sense of determination that I'm going to win this war, this is everything. We talked about how Narada Muni met Dhruva Maharaj, just a little boy, 5 years old, heading for the forest. And he was determined. He was mad. He wanted something. And he wasn't going to, he didn't care. This is the attitude. I'm going to get it, or I'll die getting it. You have that attitude, you're going to win. Same in spiritual life. Same in spiritual life. You have to have a kind of intensity. That's what moves us. Krishna bhakti rasa pavito mati kriyatam jari kritopi labdite tataloliam apimulyam ekalam janmakoti sukritir na labdite. Rupa Goswami says, in a different way, he says that this bhakti ras, or this relationship with Krishna, if it's available somewhere, go get it now. Don't wait. If you know where it's available, go purchase it. And what is the currency? There is only one currency, and it has nothing to do with your intelligence, your material intelligence. Tatalaulyam apimulyam ekalam. He says it's your greed. How much greed do you have for it? You know, greedy person will do anything to win. So we have to have the same kind of greed or determination for spiritual life. And if you have that, then you'll attain it. That's the price you pay. Yes.
Today I was thinking about the term we should use, where if you have a determination for spiritual life, should it be passion or some other word? And you gave the word greed. So is the passion the correct word? Because we don't like passion.
Well, it depends. You know, of course, passion is always better than ignorance, because it's a progressive march, and we're moving out of ignorance, you know, lethargy, who cares, into, you know, passion. You can use that in devotional service. And of course, it depends. You know, there's spiritual passion, and it's really semantics. But in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami calls utsahan, enthusiasm. And Prabhupada compares it. He said, just like in any business enterprise, if you want to get a business off the ground, you better have some enthusiasm, right? So he compares that to if you want to get your spiritual life going, you better be enthusiastic, right? You have a business. Do you have to be enthusiastic? You're darn right you do. You got to be you got to be up for it. Your customers come, it's like, you might feel terrible, but it's like, hi. So same thing in spiritual life. This is a kind of passion, you know. You might wake up on the wrong side of the floor and, you know, decide that, you know, but you still have to get up and hurry bowl. This is a kind of enthusiasm. And gradually by doing that, in the beginning, it's this spiritual life called sadhana bhakti is a pushing process, like when your car stalls and you have to push it so it'll start again. So in the same way, if my bhakti stalls, I have to push and then pop the clutch. And when once the energy comes, then it's going. And it's naturally goes by itself. So it depends on the kind of passion also. But we should act according to direction. You know, if there's different kinds of activity in this world, there's active intelligent, there's lazy intelligent, then there's lazy stupid, and the worst, active stupid. Watch out. He had nothing to say, and then he said it. Problem. So we're going to have an artik now, and we're going to say the holy names of the Lord. And this is our process. When we sing, actually, we're getting the real thing. We're going in the positive numbers. We're getting the water. If I tell you, you know, our goal is to connect to our source, and who is that source? It's the Lord in Vaikuntha. It's like telling you there's water in a cloud if you're thirsty. Just right now, if I clink my glass, I need more water, and Ramananda Saka says there's plenty of water in the clouds, then my thirst won't be quenched. But if I say I want water, and you say there's water in the well, I still have to go get a bucket and go get it. This is like yoga meditation. But when we say, chant the holy names of the Lord, that means the water right in the palm of your hand. You can just drink it and take it. So now we'll have this artik, and we're going to connect with the lotus-eyed Lord. He's here before us in his deity form and also in his name, which is the most merciful of all his forms. So we have both going for us. This is yoga, samadhi. We're able to see the Lord with our eyes, hear the Lord with our ears, and then in the passion of kirtan, of singing, it's a kind of a, you know, lovely, passionate kind of thing to sing. Mayavadis don't like that kind of thing, singing. They criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he sang and danced, but we like it because this takes us to the real world where there's singing, dancing going all the time. So we're going to do that now. We're going to sing and dance. And we do recommend that you dance. And there's a really simple way to dance, if you'd like to learn one step. There's a step passed down to us through disciplic succession. It's called the Swami step. Do you know the Swami step? Do you all know it? Would you like to learn it? Okay, then put all the books away, and I'll teach you the Swami step, and then we'll start the kirtan. Thank you very much. Go pray, Manande Haribo.